So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review you, man.
20 days.
Oh, my God.
Cactus Jack, but it's Hill right now for the game.
How hard did he hit the game? The game jumped right up.
Yeah, the game sure doesn't look like he's in trouble, JR. As much as you'd like to think that.
That's clock got the tag. He's in. Oh, no. Swinging that bringer by Cactus Jack. That's clock. Damn.
Come on, it's
clock. Cactus has got to make the tag.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting, and thank you for logging on to the Law Network, where you can go back and listen to our entire library of shows on demand.
Yes,
and you can tune. You can log on many different devices.
Yeah,
your iPad, your iPhone, apps, and so many different ways to listen. Wei, it's way. Way over the top.
Thanks.
Way over the top.
I get it.
We need to do one of those aircraft instructional videos like the Bellas did.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, it's a clever little video about how to stream the network, how to log in.
But unlike...
How to turn your computer on.
But unlike the WWE network, we will not censor... Actually, just like the WWE network, we will not censor any profane language. We will censor, however, any nudity.
Yeah, yeah. There's a few involving Wei Ting that we just, you know, back in the Attitude Era of Review Away, I mean, Jesus, whipping out foreign objects left and right.
I want to show my puppies.
Well, that's how we used to. Hey, speaking of nudity and podcasts.
Yeah.
You just listened to a podcast, your favorite podcast.
Yes.
With David Cho.
Oh, my God. Did you hear it?
I didn't listen to it, but I saw your reviews of it and comments. Tell us about this. For those of you that are maybe new to our podcast, Wei is in love with this podcast called DVD ASA?
Yeah.
And what does that mean, Wei?
Well, the supposed... I mean, am I really supposed to talk about this?
Double vaginal, double anal. What's the essay?
Okay, well, there are different meanings, but depending on who you ask. But they will tell you. I mean, first of all, the two main hosts of the show are David Cho and Asa Akira. David Cho is, of course, some of you might know, is a Korean-American graffiti artist. A lot of you might know him because he became a multimillionaire after, what's his name, Sean Fanning? Sean Parker, I mean.
Yep.
Sean Parker, who, of course, was part of on the social network. Justin Timberlake played him. Anyway, so when Facebook started, Sean Parker was just a big fan of this guy, this graffiti artist. And so he invited him to paint the Facebook offices. And, you know, at the time, they didn't really have much money to, you know, Facebook was really nothing yet. So rather than pay David Cho, they asked, well, hey, would you like to take some stock instead? And at the time, remember, Facebook was really nothing. But then, you know, this guy, David Cho, decided to take a risk and take the stock. And now he's a multi-millionaire. And of course, Asa Akira, I'm sure, probably way more famous to our demographic, Japanese-American porn star, very famous. I believe she's like a three-time, I don't know, what is that? What is the porn awards? AVN Performer of the Year or something? Anyway, so, you know, the name of the show is DVD ASA, which is, you know, you could call it David Asa, but what they prefer to refer to is double vag, double anal, sensitive artist.
Sensitive artist.
Yeah. yeah, apparently they're like double vag, double anal is like
Whoa, she is a major award winner.
Oh,
let's
yeah.
just look at last year, okay? Best double penetration sex scene with Ramon Nomar and Mick Blue. Best group sex scene. Best POV sex scene. Yeah. Best three-way sex scene, girl, girl, boy. Female performer of the year. Best ethnic performer. Oh, these were the Night Moves Awards. And then in 2014, got the AVN Award for Best Porn Star Website.
Yeah.
Tied, actually, with JoannaAngel.com with AsaAkira.com.
Well, you got to understand, like, you know, this is the Asian work ethic. We try to excel in every field that we enter, and she's no different. So, yeah, double veg, double anal is just like, it's like two cocks in like an ass or two cocks.
I think
in
most
vagina.
People know what that means.
And then of course they're both sensitive artists. They're both very sensitive artists. And so it's just a show.
She's only 28. Wow.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. So it's just a show where they kind of it's just like they talk about their lives. But what I really love about it is just how refreshingly honest they are, and they really just, I mean. I think it would horrify a lot of people, but I think a lot of other people would, you know, like myself, would listen and be like, oh, wow, okay, so, you know, I feel like a lot of us have certain thoughts about certain things, but, like, these are the only people that I ever hear that are unafraid completely to talk about certain things. And so, I mean, first of all, just as an Asian person living in the Western world, like, we rarely have any type of voice in the media. That, you know, I mean, unless you're talking about, like, fucking...
Review Away.
Yes, of course, this podcast. But unless you're talking, like, I'm not talking about Jackie Chan or what's this, William Hung. Like, that's as much as we have. Rarely do you ever get somebody who, you know, who actually has something to say. And so this latest episode, they just went past 100 episodes. And this latest episode, 101, it was just, like... Usually they record like in David Cho's studio, but this episode was just like, because the guy became so rich, he really like didn't have much incentive or motivation to do his art anymore. So what he decided was he was going to rent a cabin out in Big Bear, where where a lot of people train, and he would go there and isolate himself from all technology, no wireless reception, no cell phone reception, and he would just lock himself in the cabin and just do work. And while he did that, he decided to record like a 5-hour podcast of just himself talking to a microphone, telling the world how to be successful. And he did it. He recorded for 5 hours. And then he looked at the recorder and saw that the file was corrupt.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, he didn't say that, but he just went right back at it. It's like what we say. You know, we've lost our shows before, but the best thing to do is just suck it up and do it right away again. And so he recorded another 3-hour show, this time a little bit more condensed. But it's just like what I love about it is just how brutally honest and honestly fearless. Because the guy at this point has nothing to lose. He's a millionaire. He could say whatever's on his mind and not really suffer any repercussions. So, yeah, I recommend it.
So where can people go? Just search this for on iTunes. DVD Asa.
DVDASA.com, yeah.
Yeah, wow. So they've done over 100 episodes now.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's
I mean, they got to catch up to us, of course.
So this is just him solo for this whole show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, 5-hour show.
Like I said, it's not for everybody. You'll either love it or you hate it. But like for me, I tend to identify with some of that stuff. Yeah, it's very entertaining.
Well, what did you think of this week? It's been a bit of a whirlwind way. It's everyone's got this WWE Network fever. It seems like mm-hmm. that. Have you had a chance to sample any of the network yet?
As of this moment of this recording, I have not had a chance, but I'm very excited. I'm excited for everybody because it really does feel like it's a big moment in, and of course we talked about all this on Review Raw.
Yes.
On Monday, but again,
this is the condensed version.
Let's just reiterate. It just feels like a big moment in pro wrestling history. I mean, I suppose, you know, like to me, I don't feel like Vince has taken a risk this big since WrestleMania. You know, he's foregoing basically killing
in wrestling. I guess he's taken a few. Football would have been a big one, but
okay, I suppose. But he's killing his pay-per-view business.
Yeah,
as a
giant risk, absolutely giant risk. And that's, you know, a lot of people have noted to me just how, man, this WWE Network is just, it dwarfs Fight Pass. And it's like, yeah, it's obvious comparisons are going to come out of that. But at the same time, UFC is taking next to no risk with Fight Pass. Mm-hmm. Fight Pass could just turn out to be nothing. We find out that, you know what, people really don't want to watch live digital content. It's just the technology maybe isn't there. Whatever. We don't know. Or it could be a gold mine within a year or two from now. But the fact is, whether it fails or succeeds, the UFC, their primary revenue is on pay-per-view, and they're not compromising that.
Yeah.
Will you be watching Tough China this morning, Saturday morning at 5:45 in the morning?
I don't have Fight Pass, so no.
That's an easy answer for you then.
Yeah.
I got to say,
will you?
I will watch it, not at 5:45. That's. Wow. It seems that, you know, the night before, it's like everyone's like, well, let's see who's up at 5:45. It's like, dude, shit's on demand. Why the fuck would I wake up at 5:45 to watch
it? Well, I mean, I suppose if you're in the field, you know, people would want to live tweet about it because, you know,
not
it's reporting.
No, not me.
Well, I question your dedication.
Well, question away. I will be asleep. Much as I, Sunday morning, I slept through the Team Canada gold medal win in men's hockey.
Yeah, so
I was not waking up for that one either.
No, I didn't either.
Didn't watch any Olympics at all. Nothing.
Yeah, me neither. It just kind of came and went. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Goodbye, Olympics.
I question both of our nationalistic approach.
Yeah,
we should be deported, both of us.
Anyone who complains, they're not going to be talking about any of these athletes 3 weeks from now.
I mean,
I won't care about them for another 4 years till they come back the next winter.
I watch every George St. Pierre fight.
Yeah, that's dedication.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
Well, are you going to go watch his movie?
No.
No.
Well, even though I'm in it.
Yeah, Wei.
I have a cameo.
You're in it twice.
Well, maybe I will then.
Yeah, you're representing the Asian community. Maybe David Cho is going to see this documentary. He's a big MMA fan.
Of course.
Maybe he's going to spot Wei Ting. Say, hey, I should have that guy on my podcast. Yeah. Another Asian in the media.
Yeah, sure.
Shooting.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to hear you on that podcast.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't think I'd ever. I have a lot to lose, man. I'm not rich.
What are you talking about?
I have a lot to lose.
You are.
I got to watch what
you're
I
the
say.
Most carefree person I know.
No way, man. I got to watch every single thing that comes out of my mouth here.
No, it's fine. Wait, you've reached a certain.
This
you're
is,
bulletproof.
You think this is me? This is not me. This is my cleaned up, very squeaky clean version of me. I'm not like this ever.
Yeah, I can honestly tell you, if I did not watch wrestling or MMA. In other words, if I didn't do this job, I don't think I would have cable. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't. I rarely now watch any other sports. Whatever shows I do watch, they're easy to watch online. And I watch so much Netflix now. That's all I need.
Yeah.
And I got this WWE Network. Jesus Christ, lock me in a basement.
If my parents didn't watch the Asian channels that we get on cable, I probably already would have gotten rid of cable. Like I think it's, you know, we've talked about this before, it's going to be an oncoming trend. Like cable is sort of, unfortunately, aside from sports, you know, and like
That's why sports is so valuable right now. It's that, it's the fact that you need to watch it live.
Yeah. Fight Network channel 47
427 on
Rogers.
Oh, of course, you need to see my beautiful face on television in Canada.
Coming soon on Roku.
Yes, it is coming out on Roku as well. So even Fight Network diversifying on. Maybe one day we'll have a Fight Network app where you can stream everything online.
We do have a Fight Network app. You can stream our
podcast. Well, we have an app, but I mean, you can't watch our shows on the app.
Yeah, you can stream our podcast. You can. Not our shows, but you can.
That's
what
I'm saying.
You see a lot of our videos, though.
That is true.
You see your face on it.
Get our podcasts on the app.
I know.
That's good.
We can actually have everything on the Fight Network app. It's actually the greatest app in the world. And did you know that you could download it right now if you go to the Google Play Store?
Are you aware it's free?
Yeah. Are you aware it's free? Here, let me show you how to do it, John. Look, you just go here, click.
This is a wireless sign. Oh.
JBL here is on his laptop, and he is watching. He's loading up a video of.
Yeah, as these guys are calling a pay-per-view, they are watching old pay-per-views.
Yeah,
Jerry Lawler to me is the least sincere. It's like, you know, this guy doesn't watch a minute of wrestling when he's not calling it.
Yeah.
Nothing.
I don't know if any of them would be. Mm-hmm. I mean, like if they work in it, I don't know what their incentive would be other than, you know, showing their friends or something like that.
A guy like Zack Ryder. I believe that guy goes home and watches nothing but wrestling.
Yeah.
I'm sure he loves it. Mm-hmm. But I think most people, I've heard from most wrestlers, it's like when they're not working, they don't want to be watching wrestling.
I get that. Yeah. You see it in MMA too, you know? Fighters, a lot of them don't even follow what's going on. Like all the rumors, they don't follow. They certainly don't watch all the cards simply because they're too busy doing it themselves.
We're getting a lot of requests, everyone. This is a very interactive edition of Review Away because, surprise, surprise, everyone, it's not Wednesday at whatever time you're listening to this. And we've sent out a tweet asking what you want us to review next week on this very show. We've asked for something that's on the WWE Network, a past pay-per-view. So we're getting a lot of them, fast and furious. I think most of these people, Way, they just want us to, like, suffer through something. They're just coming up with garbage here that we have to sit through.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to go through these at the end of the show.
What are some of these suggestions that they're sending?
Well, let's see right some now because these are all going to be buried by the end. Survivor Series 2005, Survivor Series 2006, something that loads on the network, ha ha ha, because lots of people are having problems. Starrcade 95, Backlash 2000, Bunkhouse Stampede 88, the first WrestleMania, Armageddon 99 with the hashtag boobs, Halloween Havoc 90,
okay,
Great American Bash 91, which is actually a pay-per-view that is not up there.
Oh.
There's two WCW pay-per-views they have not posted there as of this recording, with Great American Bash 91, which is one of the all-time terrible pay-per-views, and Super Brawl 3, for whatever reason. I don't know why they're not up there.
Hmm. Have we done that one?
We haven't done, I don't think.
By the way, everybody.
Either of them. Oh, yeah, we should explain. For people that just listened to Review Away, what are we reviewing today?
We are not reviewing Super Brawl 8, in case you couldn't tell from the title of this file. Like we announced last week, yeah, let's do Super Brawl 8. That sounds like a great idea. Sure enough, moments later, somebody told us.
You realize if we hadn't had that pointed out, you and I were totally going to rewatch that.
Oh, yeah.
Because neither of us remember reviewing this.
Of course not. No,
none of us had any clue that we had reviewed this. I would have watched it over again.
We would have. No, at some point I would have realized, oh, I've seen
it. I don't think I would have. Because I know it's on that show, and I still don't remember that.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not. But if we did go through it, we talked, of course, about the idea of just simply replaying the old...
did review Super Brawl 3.
Oh, we did? Oh,
whoops. So there you go, folks. If you have the network and you want to find out what's on this mysterious pay-per-view they left off, go back to...
Wherever the fuck we... Jesus. Lawradio.proboards.com and then Control-F, type in Super Brawl 3.
That's it.
All you need to do. By the way, everybody, this network could actually work out great for our podcast.
Oh, yeah.
You don't know what to watch. You got, what, 15,000 hours of videos to select from? Well, why don't you go through our archives, see a show that you're somewhat interested in, somewhat curious in, watch a show on the network, and then listen to us tear the shit out of it.
That, to me, has become some of my favorite. I really see this, like, companion programming with stuff. Like, that's why I got into this Saved by the Bell podcast, was that I really just want to watch the episode so I could then hear what they think about it on this podcast.
Yes.
And I think that's
So we are the stars here. We are the draw. You should be paying us $9.99 a month.
Well, I'm saying,
folks. Six-month commitment.
Watch the pay-per-view, and then from there... Oh, take this call.
No.
Oh. Okay. Go watch a pay-per-view, and then go download our archive.
Yeah.
It's all up there in the law message board.
Exactly.
Go to episode archives. All our past shows are up there.
We're making so much money.
This sounds like a WWE pay-per-view.
We're totally, like, making money for them.
Yeah. It's a great companion, folks. So
it is their company.
By the end of the show, we will pick something to review, and we will cross-check it to make sure we have not reviewed it already.
Yeah, so somebody pointed out that we reviewed this thing already, and unfortunately, you know, my idea was, hey, John, why don't we just, like, re-record the banter off the top and we'll just, like, seamlessly cut into the same review that we just did before. But
we might do that some week.
We will.
See if anyone notices.
Yeah.
The last thing before we get on to our review for this week is, Wei, you know that I have a weird deal when it comes to remembering dates.
You certainly do.
And I log on to the WWE Network on Monday. And what should I see is that for every pay-per-view, they have a thing called date aired, and every single pay-per-view is off by a day.
Oh, no.
They have it a day prior instead of the actual day the pay-per-view took place on. I noticed one. I'm like, oh, that's weird. They screwed up on one. And then I'm going through every one.
Oh, wow.
Every single day is off.
Every one is off?
Every single one.
There must be, okay, maybe.
Like, there's ones where it's a poster with the correct date, and then below it says date aired and it's off.
Could it be, like, could they be on, like, some type of different time zone? Like, could their internal clocks be set on some different time zone? But I don't even know how that would work.
That would mean, though, like, say it was based on the UK,
yeah,
it would then be a date ahead, not a date behind.
Oh, so it's a day late.
it's like, say the pay-per-view is March 28th. It's listed on iTunes as March 27th or on the network as March 27th. It's a day behind what the actual air date was.
I'm already so confused. But okay, so it's wrong. So
I'm thinking someone maybe inputted this and they had a calendar, and you know how there's an S and an S for Saturday and Sunday? They just followed the wrong columns or something.
I would hope that if it was somebody's job, somebody went through the process of getting applying for it and being hired for a job like that, that they would know that Saturday comes before Sunday.
Okay, I'm not going to tell out loud, but that might be my pick to review next week on the network.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. I don't have
because you and
that?
I just watched a promo.
Yeah, have we done that one?
No, we haven't done that.
Are you sure?
Okay. I'm not sure, but I will check. Okay, that's the leading candidate. We'll see if we get any like better suggestions.
I like that.
Okay, we're chatting Raw from February the 7th of 2000.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wonderful time in the world of the World Wrestling Federation.
Yes, it was.
It was the arrival of the Radicals, Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, Perry Saturn, and Eddie Guerrero from WCW. In a deal that we found out in Jimmy Corderas' book, The Three Count, the man who put that deal together, or at least got the Radicals in touch with an executive in the WWF, was no one else than Gentleman Jeff Merrick.
Wow.
There's a story in Jimmy's book where Jeff Merrick calls Corderas, says, hey, theoretically, if four talents in WCW were willing to jump over, who could we talk to? And Corderas was all worried about contract tampering and what was going on, and he got Merrick in touch with Bruce Pritchard, I believe it was, who called Merrick, and they were on Raw the following Monday.
Done deal.
Yeah.
Damn.
Were you watching wrestling at that time?
I was. Yeah. I think it was like sort of sporadic prior to this, but I was still watching, yeah.
For those that weren't, at this particular time, it was when Vince Russo had been sent home by WCW in mid-January, the weekend of the sold-out pay-per-view, and they had to rebook stuff on the fly. They were in the midst of bringing back Kevin Sullivan to be part of the new creative staff. That sold-out pay-per-view, they ended up putting the WCW title on Chris Benoit, who had already stated he was ready to leave. A bunch of the guys, including Guerrero, Saturn, and Malenko all got together. Shane Douglas was originally part of it. Conan, others were all going to make the jump. Mm-hmm. And the word was WWF wasn't that keen on Douglas. Conan didn't end up going with them, and it came down to four of them. And they thought, hey, we'll put the title on Benoit. He'll want to stay if we put the title on him. Benoit won the title, did this speech on afterwards, this interview, putting over the title. And then he handed the title over and said, cool, I'm still done. And
big move, man.
Huge move.
Yeah.
And then they still had contracts at the time. But what happened was Mike Graham apparently had some altercation with Benoit. And
who is Mike Graham?
Mike Graham was an agent at the time, who was Eddie Graham's son and had been working with WCW for years, and threatened Chris Benoit. And it was enough of a serious threat that WCW were too concerned that this would go to human relations or human resources. They got all four of them were released from their contract, and they were allowed to walk right onto Raw.
I always thought it was Kevin Sullivan that was involved in some of that.
Sullivan was coming back, and none of them wanted to work under Sullivan because of the past issues with Chris, Nancy, and Sullivan.
Right.
But it was Mike Graham, who was always very much tied with Kevin Sullivan. I mean, those two go way back in Florida. And it was Mike Graham who made the threat to Chris Benoit, and that ended up helping, at least in part, to their release. And Bill Bush was essentially, hey, they don't want to be here, let them go. And that was a giant loss for WCW with those four going over to the WWF. That's when, I mean, WWF was huge at the time, but now you had four top flight workers as well. And that's when you really saw the in-ring in 2000 jump enormously.
Yeah, for sure. How do you know, in hindsight, how did you like the way that they were brought in?
It wasn't incredible by any stretch. I mean, they showed up at a Raw in Pittsburgh, and then they had them all compete that week on SmackDown. And that's before we had SmackDown in Canada, so I never saw that episode. But what they did was they had a tag match. Mm. It was Malenko and X-Pac. Then they had, and it was basically like a best of three matches. And if they won, they'd get their contracts. So Malenko lost to X-Pac. Then they had Guerrero and Saturn, if I'm not mistaken, against the New Age Outlaws. And that's when Guerrero did a frog splash and fucked up his elbow, which you see is in the sling on this particular episode.
First matched in.
Yeah. And I imagine they were booked to win that match. But Guerrero, knowing he was hurt, just instructed Road Dogg to pin him. Huh. So therefore, the best of three was kind of negated because the WWF team had already won.
That's weird.
And then they did Hunter and Benoit later in the night, which was, in a weird way, your WCW champion that never lost his title got pinned by Hunter. So they got all three of them, all three matches they lost in going into this Monday's Raw. So
it's kind of baffling.
Yeah, it was not like they were presented as, you know, some kind of big invasion, even though they were coined the Radicals and the WCW stuff was brought up on the SmackDown. Mm. But they kind of were just brought in and then kind of inserted into place as kind of they were put in the mid-card sort of right away. This was, they were brought in with some steam, but not as if they were going to be doing a whole lot at the top end. Mm-hmm. This Raw was in Dallas, Texas, and was a huge show for them. Going back here, this show did a 6.5 rating, a 9.8 share going against Nitro, and the main event 10-man tag way, unopposed, at an 8.1 rating.
Wow.
So
wow,
the Radicals didn't do so bad in a main event position.
Mm-mm.
This Dallas crowd, incredible. We'll chat about that later. But the show started off with a recap of their debut and going through SmackDown, Eddie Guerrero messing up his elbow, and it also included Hunter pinning Benoit. Benoit did get a visual tap on Hunter and then just playing up that, you know, Hunter getting the win over Benoit coming out of there. The crowd began. Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler were on commentary. They announced it was sold out. And the show starts off with X-Pac coming out with Tori as Ross is furious, calling Tori.
What is this Tori's last name? I've never.
E.
E.
Tori. Yeah. Okay. No relation to Big E.
Okay, sure.
She never had a last name.
No,
yeah, just Tori. That was a lot of the women. Just no last names. Jacqueline.
Yeah, that's true.
The Cat.
They no. Eventually, they would all get
some, but others were just they just had simple one name. They would always go Lita. That was one name.
Yeah,
I guess. So Ross is yelling about how Tori was that Jezebel that broke Kane's heart. This was when Kane and Tori had been paired together, and then Kane somehow put up his girlfriend in a match, and she lost, and Tori had to spend the Christmas holidays with X-Pac against her will.
And then suffered Stockholm Syndrome.
Well, what a shitty boyfriend Kane was to put her up in that kind of situation. X-Pac here, full beard and glasses, comes out, and he doesn't even get to talk before the Radicals come out. Guerrero's in a sling. X-Pac is grabbing a chair in case they attack him. And Saturn cuts a promo saying they all wanted to make an impact last week when they came in. Malenko recaps SmackDown and trying to get contracts with the WWF, but they failed. They just weren't good enough. We blew it. And Guerrero, he gets a ton of heat here. Thanks the WWF fans. He just wanted to perform in front of them. And Benoit then thanks Cactus Jack. And that prompts Cactus to come out.
I was kind of confused because even upon just watching this segment, it seemed like crowd reaction to them was kind of mixed. Like, it seemed like, I mean, it was loud, of course, but it seemed like they were getting booed by a lot of this crowd.
Yeah, especially that? Eddie. Eddie got a lot of heat.
And
here,
why would that be? Because they were certainly portrayed as baby faces throughout the past week, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, they came in, and I mean, I'm sure most people, they just accept, you know, fresh faces as baby faces, but there's also, you know.
They were also associated with
They're coming in from the rival company and kind of presented as such, and
But it was Foley that brought them in.
It was, but I don't know. Can't really give you much of a reason for it. They were also booked kind of silly on that SmackDown. Not exactly invigorating your audience to get behind these guys. So the Radicals cut their promos individually. Cactus Jack comes out, and he goes to hug them. And then Triple H and Stephanie come out. My, how things have changed 14 years later.
Man, she looks so young here. She looks like a teenager.
Yeah, she was like mid-20s here.
Yeah.
A young Stephanie. Stephanie says that Cactus Jack lost the Rumble. The Radicals lost last week. Pokes fun at the Dallas Cowboys defensive line. And this brings out a chant of asshole. And then Hunter says he is sick of Cactus Jack. wants it to end between them, and he's saying at No Way Out, he's going to give Cactus Jack his final title match. Cactus can choose the stipulation, but it cannot involve weapons in any form. So Jack responds that he wants a Hell in a Cell match, which at this time was an extremely protected gimmick.
Yep.
And Jim Ross sold this like he had just said that Jesus Christ himself is going to officiate this match.
Well, you know, the Hell in a Cell brand was very strong, but Mick Foley brand was also very strong. And when you put the two of them together, like Mick Foley, those two will always be linked, Mick Foley and Hell in a Cell. And, you know, you put Foley in a Hell in a Cell, and it's almost like seeing Michael Jordan in the you know, NBA Finals in Game 7, you know what I mean? Like, it's everybody remembers the match, of course, with the Taker, and so expectations going into this one, of course, was that something crazy is going to happen. He's going to fall through the cage. He's going to jump off the cage. How is he going to outdo that legendary match?
Yeah, that was, I mean, the initial thought was, you know, this is Mick Foley in a Hell in a Cell. And at the time, I remember thinking, man, did these guys almost book themselves into a corner, because everyone's going to expect Foley to outdo his first performance, which was impossible.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to see that guy try to top that.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, the way it went, it's like no one looks down on that Hell in a Cell match.
No,
it was a great match between the two. And so that's set up. Hunter accepts, but adds that if Cactus Jack loses this match, he has to retire, and includes all of his incarnations. There's not going to be any funny business about him coming back, which was funny given how things worked out. And then Jack lists off all of his career accomplishments, but says the one thing he hasn't done is headline WrestleMania. And he's willing to risk his career, because if he cannot beat Hunter, he doesn't want to continue his career. And if he wins, Hunter doesn't get a rematch. Cactus goes to WrestleMania and defends against the winner of The Rock and Big Show, who are facing off at the same pay-per-view. I thought this was set up so great, mm-hmm. because you honestly could suspend your disbelief that Foley could very well win this. It tells a great story to headline WrestleMania, and I think those are the best programs where you can conceivably see it going either way.
Yeah. The placement of this in the February pay-per-view certainly helped, you know, helped you believe that Foley could win. I do wonder, though, why, you know, this that absolutely was supposed to be Foley's last match.
Yep.
Why did they decide to do it here and not at WrestleMania?
Which, the
Foley's retirement.
I think that the idea was just, they wanted something for the February show, and they had their plan for WrestleMania, which you couldn't really do Hunter and Cactus Jack in the main event of Mania.
Why not?
I think they wanted The Rock in the main event. Mm. I mean, he was your top babyface at the time.
But wouldn't it just even help to have that name? I mean, ultimately they did.
Well, that's what they felt in the end. They did need him. So,
but this was, you know, this was somewhat of a looking ahead type of booking, you know, like if they said, like, what? Why did they decide? Okay, Foley, you're gonna do your last match here. We'll just opt you out from Mania.
Well, I think the idea as well was that Royal Rumble did really, really well, way above expectations. This was when Austin was out, so you didn't have your number one star, but that show did really well. I'm sure they thought, hey, we can easily come back with a rematch here, and WrestleMania is WrestleMania. We've got something big. We've got The Rock, and that can be his big title chase for going into Mania. That, you know, that show's going to do well. And now let's just focus on this February show. Foley knew he was winding down at this point. I mean, he was ready to retire in late 99, and they just asked him to stick around for a few more months when Austin went down. And I'm sure that this was just the plan to, you know, make this February pay-per-view something noteworthy. I mean, the fact that they were adding the Hell in a Cell on top of it,
yeah,
kind of shows that. So Hunter then has a great brain fart here as he says, you've got 20 days left in your career.
He was judging by the same clonk as the WWE Network guy.
Maybe he was worried. Maybe he thought this was a SmackDown taping or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he reiterates everything that they just established in the promo. Lots of repetition here. And says, well, right now, I want a piece of your ass. And he gets up onto the apron, and he tells the Radicals that they need to show their appreciation for the man that gave them their contracts, and the Radicals turn on Cactus Jack and beat him down. Crowd is furious, and they all join up with Triple H. X-Pac, who's just been standing there for 20 minutes, delivers a Bronco Buster to Cactus Jack. There's a diving headbutt by Benoit, followed up by a pedigree. This segment was almost 22 minutes to start the show.
Wow.
So, significant portion of Raw, and this integrated the Radicals into the WWF, yet they were still called the Radicals after this.
Mm. Was it the right move to turn all four of them heels?
I thought it was kind of quick. Yeah. But I guess they felt they needed more heels than they needed baby faces at this point. Mm-hmm. And this was their storyline reason to at least... It kind of took out the whole, you know, these are the rebels infiltrating WWF right away.
Absolutely. I just felt like, yeah, throughout their whole kind of debut, I felt like there was very little mention made of WCW, where I feel like if it was on the, you know, if it was the other way around, WCW, I mean, you saw it with the NWO, they would try to milk that association as much as they can. I don't know if that just, you know, says a lot about where things were at the time between the two companies, but it's something notable. And I also just feel like, you know, history has kind of shown that, you know, at least Eddie and Benoit, they were better served as baby faces throughout their run. And, you know, I just felt like they could have probably had a longer run here coming as new faces rather than just sort of being the heel underlings of Triple H.
Yeah, and you looked at this, and I mean, this was also at a time where both sides were really just trying to get whatever stars they could. And Saturn and Malenko, I really question how many plans they really had for those two. And even to a lesser degree, I think Eddie. I think they saw Benoit as a real good addition. But even those two, I mean, it would take years for them to get to where they would be on top. And I'd argue that this intro was kind of the peak for Saturn and Malenko in terms of, you know, relevancy in that top picture. They would kind of just be throughout the mid-card, and then Malenko would eventually move over to an agent's role, and Saturn would leave the company. Hunter and the Radicals are in the back after the commercial break. They say that that is just the start for Mick Foley tonight, and they have Hunter and Stephanie, who of course are in the authority position in the year 2000, book a 5-on-1 handicap match against Mick Foley tonight with Hunter, X-Pac, and the Radicals, the ones that are healthy, taking on Mick Foley, and said that if Foley can find anyone, then they can, then he can have partners. But they're going in with the idea it'll be 5-on-1 in the main event.
Why was Foley portraying Cactus Jack at this point? What was the explanation there?
Well, going into the Royal Rumble, they did. It was actually a really good reveal where Hunter had just decimated mankind, and he came out saying, you know what, Hunter, you're right. I can't face you at the Royal Rumble. I'm not at your level. Mankind is just not ready for this. But I'll tell you who is ready. And he did this big, he ripped the shirt open, and it was he was digging down deep to find Cactus Jack for this street fight with Triple H.
And they decided to keep Cactus Jack even throughout this, through his retirement?
Yeah, they went with that for the... And then he came back, he was just plain Mick Foley at
Yeah, I
Mania.
Always found that interesting, like, because it feels like definitely Cactus Jack is sort of he's regarded as a more hardcore version of Mick Foley, but I feel like his most well-known character is as Mankind, and I feel like, I don't know, like for a retirement match, it kind of maybe seemed more appropriate to have what he's known best for.
Then the New Age Outlaws came out, again, this was a 2000 Raw, and do their intro with Road Dogg, including the line that they are sweeping the competition like a janitor's mop. You know what I've come to realize with the New Age Outlaws?
What's that?
They're just the shittiest heel tag team ever. Like, they're terrible heels.
Oh, yeah, no. They're
like,
not.
They do this intro, there's no way the crowd doesn't get into them.
Okay, yeah, I wouldn't say they're the shittiest heel tag team ever, but...
Well, they just don't try to be heels.
This is definitely... I don't know if there's a way to be a heel and do this whole thing, you know? It's just such designed to be so fan-friendly. I guess if they're extra annoying with it, yeah. But, I mean, at least at this point, people love it.
I like their line Sunday at the pay-per-view where it's just Road Dogg making up shit that we've headlined WrestleManias and we've sold out the Garden. It's like, yeah, go with ridiculous statement. They have not headlined WrestleMania. I'm sure somewhere they were
a house
in some
show, probably.
They probably headlined a house show in Madison Square Garden with a bunch of other guys. Sure.
They might have been in the Royal Rumble that ended the one of the main Madison Square Garden.
Maybe Road Dogg worked as an agent for one of the main events at WrestleMania.
Yes.
Maybe
he was saying we as a company.
Maybe Billy Gunn has worked with a talent. He helped put together a match in Florida a couple weeks before.
Maybe he meant like he put his forehead on the line at Madison Square Garden. Some line that exists somewhere.
Maybe they actually physically hung the WrestleMania sign, the headline,
yes,
above the ring.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make sense of it. So they do this whole thing. Did you notice on this Raw way that it seemed like most of the guys that came out, they gave them like a minute to do whatever it was, yep, their catchphrases. Yeah. I thought it made such a difference that it got the crowd into stuff and it let these guys talk on the mic for a bit. You got some personality over rather than just comes out to his music and has a match.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
There's so much more of that now today, whereas...
Well, you know, I think that's good and bad, because I remember reviewing one of those Russo episodes of Raw not too long ago, and it was just so fast. And, I remember watching that and feeling like, wow, okay, this is actually moving really quick. I kind of like this. But I feel also there's something good about how things are today, because, you know, we get to see longer matches. Like, none of these matches meant anything except the main event. But none of the other matches on the show, you couldn't even really get into them because they were so fast before a run-in happened or something. Yeah. So I think
there's a happy medium there. There's the extreme that we saw in, like, 99, 2000, where it'd be like, man, these two-minute matches with DQs. And today, where it's like, I don't need 3 20-minute matches on Raw every single week and more on SmackDown.
I don't need a Del Rio Kofi Kingston 20-minute match.
Exactly.
The outcome is meaningless.
It's filling time.
Yeah.
There's no need for that to be that long other than eating up time. So they show the this angle that's going on involving the Dudleys, Edge and Christian, and the Hardys, and a bunch of table angles, so you could sort of see the direction they were setting things up for WrestleMania, where they would have the ladder match for the tag titles. And kind of interesting that Billy Gunn would get hurt right around this time with, I believe, a shoulder injury, and he'd need surgery. And that was the end of the New Age Outlaws, actually. Later, that February pay-per-view was the last time they would team up in the WWF before this latest run. But getting the New Age Outlaws out of that picture, I mean, that led to the big renaissance with those three teams. Could you imagine if you had to work the New Age Outlaws into that WrestleMania,
you know,
for
I wonder. We can't just discount them. Like, we can't say, oh, that match would have sucked with it if you put the two of them in.
No, but I just mean in terms of presenting these three new teams that were all kind of fresh teams that just really worked well together. I just probably didn't see Billy Gunn being knocked off a ladder to the floor through tables.
We don't know.
Maybe.
But yeah, I totally know what you mean. Like, I think, you know, getting the Outlaws out of there kind of put sort of more of a symbolic line between the two eras.
Yeah. So we got the New Age Outlaws against Edge and Christian for the tag titles. Jim Ross notes here that Edge is engaged to Val Venus's sister Alana, which was legitimate at this time. They would get married and divorced, and I guess tried to work it into this storyline at some point. Brother-in-law Edge.
Did they ever team?
They didn't team together, but I guess it was somewhat teased. I have very vague recollections of Edge and his engagements being worked on television. So the Dudleys come out. They're right by the commentators, and they're playing up that Bubba has just gone over the edge now. He's just the sick man.
Well, by this point he had gotten rid of the whole stuttering thing that he came in with from ECW, and this was
a good thing to get rid of.
Yeah, like at this point, I feel like this was when they really started to take off.
That funky black hat on here.
Got rid of the tie dye. This was when, you know, they did the whole attacking women gimmick. Did you find it like interesting that? I mean,
there was lots of male on female violence on this show.
Not so much that.
Oh,
but the fact that Devon here seemed to be the one who was doing more of the talking. He was the guy who was put on the headset. They only had three headsets. So it was Devon on the announce desk, and Bubba would be the one just standing outside, just kind of shouting.
I always thought Devon was a good talker that didn't get enough. Like, the Reverend Devon gimmick was terrible, but his delivery, I thought, was always really good.
Yeah, I do too, but by far, you know, I don't know about back then, but by far, at this point, Bubba Ray is definitely the better of the two, if not one of the better guys in all of the industry.
Yeah, yeah. So they had just recently did a big angle where they powerbombed Terry through a table and taken her out, and they were talking that we may never see Terry again. The match features Edge hitting this double neck breaker, makes a hot tag to Christian. Christian comes in with an inverted neck breaker by Christian to the Road Dog. Billy Gunn makes the save, then Edge spears Gunn. Bubba, behind the referee's back, drops Christian onto the top rope with his neck, and then Road Dogg is able to pin Christian at 6 minutes and 9 seconds as Bubba yells at Jim Ross that he is a sick man, and then Edge attacks Bubba as they leave to the back to end the segment.
I don't have much to say about the match. I felt like most of the focus was on this commentary between the Dudleys.
It's amazing here that of these three tag teams featured in this segment, only D-Von and Edge are not regular performers on TV right now, 14 years later. Yeah. Mark Henry.
Wow, man, this show, jeez.
He's in the back with Mae Young, and we have just learned that Mae Young is with child.
Baby, this is very important. I mean, you don't need to go out of ringside. Anything could happen out there. Besides, we got our bun warming in the oven. Sit down now. Promise me you ain't going out there. Just sit here. Everything will be all right.
She's pregnant!
See you later.
And Henry is concerned about her going out to the ring tonight. Says, you have our bun in the oven. So, a concerned father-to-be, Mark Henry. And they show a bunch of the Dallas Mavericks and Stars in the audience. Kurt Angle comes out, and he offers to be Dallas's sports hero each week, but not tonight, saying there's a bunch of comparisons that Angle and Henry have in common. Both were Olympians, but says he's had success in the WWF, whereas Henry's biggest claim to fame is impregnating an 82-year-old woman. And even in 2000 here, you could see Kurt Angle of what would become a worse problem later. You can see his leg all taped up here.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, this guy was hurting even in 2000.
I didn't notice
the leg. Yeah, it was all taped up.
I didn't notice, like, this. Obviously his size when he first debuted.
Yeah, he's growing.
He's growing, but he's kind of shrunk back again.
In different ways, yeah. He says that Henry getting Mae Young pregnant lacked integrity and intelligence, even though it did require intensity, and says that Dallas lives in sin, and it's not acceptable to him. So this was when Curdy had just come in the prior fall and was kind of...
He's still kind of finding his...
Yeah, he seemed pretty comfortable on the mic at this point, though, only a couple months into his run.
This was I found it interesting that, you know, this was a battle of two American Olympians from the 1996 Olympics, and only one of them was portrayed as such. The other was portrayed as
a man that has sex with 80-year-old women.
Yeah.
And these two would one day headline a Royal Rumble together for a world title.
Right.
Henry lifts and drops Angle on his chest, hits a power slam, just doing a bunch of power spots. And before too long, Mae Young runs down the ramp, gets into the ring, and starts slapping Kurt's back. And Angle turns around and gives Mae Young an Angle slam. And the DQ is called at 2 minutes and 1 second, as Ross says, she's close to 80 years old.
Listen.
This was like, she got a lot of height on this angle. Like, Angle launched her.
Yeah. Like, yeah, an amazing visual, absolutely. But this was an 80-year-old woman, like legit 80-year-old woman. I just couldn't believe what they were doing to this. And this wouldn't even be it. Like, she'd take much worse. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. But it's happened. I guess she knows how to take a bump.
The Rock arrives at the building in Dallas wearing this horrendously ugly blue button-up shirt with the buttons undone. This is how The Rock strolls around town. His open shirt.
It's the 90s, man.
It was. Actually, it was the 2000s.
Oh, yeah. Never mind.
We would have back-to-back topless scenes, because the next scene featured Mark Henry with Mae Young and Moolah in the back as they are checking on the baby. And Mae Young yells she doesn't like it on her back, she likes it on top, and gets up and rips her shirt off.
Yeah. Like, I mean, come to think of it, you know, Mae Young certainly was she was a pillar of the Attitude Era. Like she was like,
I guess.
No, really. Like, come on. You think about the hand. Like, that's one of the classic Attitude Era moments. Like, how perfect was it that we have this kind of, what is it? Exhibitionist senior citizen who loves to talk about sex and take her shirt off. How classic.
What an asset to the company.
No, for real. I'm sure that's what they thought.
Up next, we had the Hollies, Crash and Hardcore in the back and talking about how they need a victory to get back on track. And we had a hardcore match with the Acolytes taking on the Hollies. And Ross notes that the Acolytes have just started a new organization called the APA a week before.
Right, okay.
So that was the start of that. They start brawling on the floor. All four go into the crowd and then into the concourse area. I guess an ode to the Tupelo concession stand brawl back in Memphis wrestling. Ross calls these, quote, ugly matches. And that, this was. Crash got thrown into the concession stand. Bradshaw grabs a beer as Farouk is literally drinking from the beer tap. And then Hardcore gets a garbage can, throws it at Bradshaw. Bradshaw and Hardcore are on top of the concession stand. I thought one of them was going to fall off. When all of a sudden, the late Viscera shows up and comes across, and he's got a 2x4, and he's there to attack Bradshaw because he's been hired by the Hollies for backup. And poor Vis, he slips on the floor from all the liquid that's been spilled, just wipes out on the floor here, has to stumble back up, and then hits Bradshaw with the 2x4, finishes the spot, and Hardcore pins Bradshaw 2.5 minutes.
Of all the shows we could have picked.
I felt terrible. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Well, listen, we did not plan this ahead. We did not know last week when we picked this that unfortunate incidents were to occur. Obviously, he's had many great moments.
I'm sure better this guy looked back and would have been laughing at this.
This was not the best sampling from Viscera's catalog, but yeah, come on. This was funny.
So,
it was a Shockmaster type of moment.
It was. It very much was a Shockmaster moment. Chris Jericho comes out, cuts a promo at the top of the ramp because he's got a match with Viscera next.
Yeah.
This is the most we've seen Viscera on a Raw I can ever recall.
I can't believe it.
And he calls Viscera the love child of Mr. T and Fat Albert and calls him Viscera the Hut. And he pities the fool who messes with Y2J. I say
so
it
annoying,
every time.
Dude.
This 2000 Y2J character just, it doesn't age well.
No, he's like the annoying kid in class who tries to be funny. He's like the friend amongst your group of friends, like who's like, oh, I'm the funny one. I'm the guy who makes the jokes. I'm the clown. But like secretly everybody thinks you're actually not that funny.
Do you think like there's like kids now who just love like The Miz? And it's like 15 years from now, they're going to start a podcast reviewing shows. And they're going to be like, man, that Miz, what were we thinking back then?
I guarantee you that'll happen. But my question is, what would a 30-year-old from 2000 think about Chris Jericho? Like, what did a 30-year-old think back then of Chris Jericho?
I mean, like, promos like this, I'm not a big fan of. But, I mean, Chris Jericho, once the match begins,
yeah.
I mean, the comparisons end.
For sure.
With Miz.
Yeah.
That was it. I mean, Chris Jericho was...
No, he was still definitely likable. Still a very likable character, regardless of what he was saying. It's just that... I think maybe it's because he's become so much better. He's evolved his character so much right now that we know what else he's capable of.
It seemed like this was all delivery and not so much... If you're listening to what he's saying,
no,
it doesn't really resonate.
Just lame, stupid jokes.
Yeah. And that would evolve. I found when he got into the program with Stephanie, that's when he kind of started to change stuff around quite a lot. I mean, at this time, I mean, Jericho was doing so little here. He came in, and he really outlines this in his book, that first year in the company, like, he thought Vince was going to fire him. Like, Vince just seemed to hate his character, ragged on his segments and stuff, and it really like humbled the guy
right
during that time, and this is right in the middle of that. Not a great match here. 3 minutes. Jericho missed this missile drop kick off the second turnbuckle. Hit it, but then runs into a spinning heel kick from Viscera. Very impressive, given that guy's size, doing a spinning heel kick. They're fighting onto the apron, and then Jericho does his usual springboard, goes off the top rope, and nearly loses his balance, but finishes off the drop kick, goes to the floor with a baseball slide as Viscera gets out of the way. Back in the ring, Viscera hits a Samoan drop, misses a splash in the corner. Jericho face plants him, goes for the lion salt, and as he hits it, Crash and Hardcore run in to return the favor, and that's when the DQ is called at 3 minutes. The APA run in, everyone fights, they hit a double vertical suplex to Viscera, and ends the segment. Not much of a match.
No, not necessarily a groups of pairings that I really want to see either.
They recap the big angle at the start of the show with the Radicals aligning with Triple H, and man, they beat this into your head. They must have replayed this angle like three times to make you, this is the big story of the show, and to set up
which
the main event.
Which doesn't seem like a lot by today's standards, but in a two-hour show, it kind of does.
Oh, yeah. Like, they were drilling it in case, you know, you missed it and making sure that resonated. The Radicals are in the locker room with Michael Cole. They all take turns talking. They say they were appreciative of the fans. Foley fooled himself into thinking that friendship came ahead of business. He's got no stroke, they said, whereas Hunter does. And Benoit and Saturn were just wearing these crazy shirts. And Saturn had this leather hat at the time.
Yeah, his
these fashionistas. Like
what kind of hat was it?
I don't even know what you would call it.
It wasn't a Kangol hat. It was like one of those.
No, it was just like
it looked like a cylinder. Like a
cylindrical object.
Yeah.
I don't know if it has a proper name. The Saturn.
Like a dish.
The Saturn lid. The lids of Saturn.
Yeah, the ring.
Kevin Kelly is outside of The Rock's locker room saying that The Rock will speak later. And then Luna is with Gangrel, her husband at the time. And Gangrel's telling her to be calm. It says tonight she can win the women's title. And Luna's livid because Jacqueline hit her with a chair shot to lead to this match. We come back from break, and Jim Ross knows.
And the big kickoff is 1 year away, King. The XFL on its way.
1 year away from the XFL launching.
1 whole year.
The XFL had just been announced a couple days before this episode of Raw.
Mm-hmm.
What a countdown.
You know, like, you talk about how this might have been a bigger risk than this WWE network. And you know what? Yeah, I'll say so, because from the get-go, I feel like a lot of us could tell that this was going to be a bad idea. You know what I mean? Like, the track record of the WWE is that they haven't really been very successful outside of their main business, which is pro wrestling. And I'm not a football fan, so I can't really say, but I didn't really see this being successful from the get-go.
Yeah. I mean, the XFL, you know, despite all the failures, it was like they knew when to pull the plug on this thing. They took a giant loss. They, like, split the losses with NBC. They lost like 50, 60 million when they had to close the league. But you look at the network here. I mean, if they destroy their pay-per-view business, I mean, that would be a very tough, you know, acknowledgement if they say, hey, this didn't work. We're moving back to pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a real tough sell on people that these things go from $10 a month back to whatever it was. You might never really get a lot of those people back there except for WrestleMania.
Maybe, but at the same time, like, if people want to watch wrestling, they'll have no other option. You know, if they want to watch these pay-per-views, they'll really have no choice.
Jacqueline and Luna for the women's title. I don't recall Gangrel and Luna here together at all, but they come out to the Brood entrances. I guess they thought, we're moving Edge and Christian on, but damn, that's a good entrance. We want to keep that.
It is.
It was a great entrance. Yeah. She was billed at Luna as being from the other side of darkness. And Jim Ross asks, where the hell is that? The other side of darkness.
Yeah.
That's where Rory McDonald hails from.
Yeah.
The animal.
Mm-hmm.
Jackie is billed from Dallas, Texas, conversely. Got a big pop. They immediately roll to the floor, and the referee gets in the middle of them. Luna misses a Vader bomb. Jackie hits this bridging German and pins her. A minute 13.
Well, I'm surprised you were able to follow the match, because JR just spent this entire match giving out live event dates. He really didn't call more than two holds, one of which was the finish from Jackie.
Yeah.
So
Luna attacks Jackie after from behind, and Gangrel lays out Jacqueline with the Impaler DDT. So I guess we're going to get Jacqueline and Gangrel for the women's title down the line.
Yeah.
That's what they were building to. They aired a vignette on Taz, where he had already debuted at this point at the Rumble, but these were some good vignettes.
And I love vignettes.
Yeah. He says all the people he grew up with are either dead or in jail, and the mood is about to change. Great introduction to this guy. Didn't do much with him once he was in there.
No.
Got injured right after WrestleMania that year, and that kind of sidetracked him. Had that brief program with Lawler, and then he was moved into an announce position. Mm-hmm. That was the Taz run. Kevin Kelly's with The Rock, who has a match with The Big Show at the No Way Out pay-per-view. But Rock wants to know if Kevin Kelly has ever had any pie. And Kelly responds, "Why, I just had some apple pie today." And Rock is talking about poontang pie. And Kelly laughs and says, "Well, Rock, of course. I'm Kevin Kelly, the voice of a Ring of Honor." And Rock says he's going to give Kelly some poontang pie. And he proceeds to show off his new T-shirt. The how any responsible parent could buy this shirt for their child. It has a cartoon Brahma bull eating pie with the text "Poontang Pie," and proceeds to put this T-shirt over Kevin Kelly's face for the duration of this interview as he cuts his promo on Big Show and joining Cactus Jack so that it will be 5-on-2 tonight.
It was a pretty horrendous shirt.
You would not have bought this. What is the worst shirt? This or the Vince Loves Cock shirt that came out a few years later?
Vince Loves
Cock. If you lost a bet, which shirt would you least want to have to wear in public?
I feel like if I wore the Vince Loves Cock shirt, there's at least a hint of irony there. Like, oh, okay, that's kind of funny because it's so obviously bad. This is very obviously bad, but I don't know if people necessarily get the joke. People would probably, I think a lot of them just think that I was crazy.
I remember a guy at O'Grady's bought that Vince Loves Cock shirt.
Yeah, Radar.
Oh, we made fun of him mercilessly for buying that.
It was very
that.
Funny.
I think he just thought it was a real funny shirt.
It's like seeing a guy wear an XFL shirt.
Yep. It's weird. At TSN, there's just a random football lying around there. It's an XFL football.
I see those around all the time.
That's weird.
Like these little XFL balls. Like
when I was cleaning out my my parents' basement a few weeks ago, I found an XFL baseball hat I had. I think I got it some year for my birthday or Christmas.
Yeah.
They did a hell of a job with merchandise.
They put their logo on everything.
Yeah. No XFL games on the WWE Network.
Yeah. I will say I'm kind of happy about the way society is just kind of strayed away from the letter X over the past decade.
Yeah.
It's just it really is a real 90s thing.
Yeah.
You remember Bush X?
I remember that.
Bush X.
And wasn't there a big thing where it's like certain places they were marketed as just Bush?
Well, this was the band Bush, of course. And and everywhere else they were Bush. But because there was another Canadian band that had existed called Bush,
yeah,
they had to call themselves
Bush X.
What should we call ourselves? And we can't be Bush. What's hip these days? X. Review Away X.
Review Away X.
Law X.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Godfather is with his hose in the back, along with D'Lo Brown, who was his, I guess, assistant, John. And we had a tag match with the Godfather and D'Lo against the Dudleys. The Dudleys cut off Godfather during his promo, another guy who just did his whole, it's time to get aboard the hoe train.
Mm-hmm. Like, these guys will always have work. Like, they'll be able to get on any indie show simply based off of, like, the gimmick.
Easy gimmick to pull off.
Yeah.
And, man, Charles Wright, you could come out as Papa Shango, the Godfather. He's got some characters.
As Papa Shango, he'd probably have to at least wrestle. Like, with this, he just has to come out, and it doesn't matter what shape.
I love Papa Shango when I was a kid.
Yeah, me too.
I remember when I was, like, 8 or 9 years old, and I got a Papa Shango action figure for my birthday, and I thought it was the coolest thing. Mm-hmm, I love nice. Papa Shango. I thought he was the coolest character on TV, and
he scared me.
Maybe doesn't hold up. Oh, that Ultimate Warrior deal
made him vomit.
It was nuts. Yeah. And I remember you always went to school with people. It's like they didn't know what the fuck was going on in the world, and they just make shit up as fact. And I remember one of them was that the Ultimate Warrior vomited on one of the guys, and it killed him. And I was like,
the vomit killed somebody?
Yeah, the vomit killed him. And I remember even at like 8 years old, I'm like, dude, you're full of shit. That's not how people die. It's like, no, man, it's fact. And then they'd always cite some stupid resource. It's like, no, man, I fucking I know a guy who told me that. It's true. It's
there's,
true.
There's some adult out there who does not, who did not end up becoming a wrestling journalist, who will probably still believe that.
No, there was like the Ultimate Warrior died. Zach Morris was dead. I remember that was a big rumor at the time.
One of the rumors I heard was that Sid Vicious was in a porno. Like he was some porn star.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know that to be true. There might be plenty of porn stars that look like Sid Vicious, but I as far as I know, Sid was not in any pornos.
No, not that we know of. Yeah. Please don't inform us if he was.
No, thanks.
They double-team D-Von. D-Von misses a leg drop off the second turnbuckle. Godfather comes in, hits the hoe train to D-Von, which was a running splash in the corner as the hoes are on the apron. And then Bubba clips Godfather's knee. And that's when I realized what a battle of aces and eights we've got here between D-Lo and the Dudleys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were, you know, setting the seeds.
Yeah, way back to this match.
Yeah. D-Von took a sky high from D-Lo, and then the hoes are checking on the Godfather on the floor, and D-Lo hits a frog splash to D-Von, but Bubba makes the save, and Irish whips D-Lo. They hit the 3D to D-Lo and pin him at 249, and then Bubba gets a table out on the floor. D-Von grabs EMT Barbara Bush, who would later known as BB at times. Bubba goes to powerbomb her off the announce desk. This was somewhat uncomfortable with this. They just grab her by the arm, and they're just going to put her through a table. But then Edge and Christian and the Hardys come out of the crowd to save Barbara Bush and chase off the Dudleys.
Definitely.
Barbara Bush X to some.
Yes. Very
nice. If you confuse her with the former First Lady.
Yeah. Barbara Bush X. certainly it was meant to be uncomfortable, you know? But, you know, you look back and this is really what got the Dudleys noticed, was doing this type of stuff.
Trivia note is that Barbara Bush would make one more appearance on SmackDown that week and then never be seen again on WWF programming.
It was that brief?
Yep. She had been on in 99, like later in the year. She'd been on TV for a few months as like the hot EMT was her gimmick.
Okay.
They do another recap of the opening segment. And Michael Cole is with Cactus Jack in the back.
Don't count Cactus Jack out. I was not even supposed to be here. 15 years ago, they said, Mick Foley, you're too slow. You're too ugly. You're not big enough. You're not strong enough. And for 15 years, I've been proving people wrong. And you expect Triple H and four ingrates to stand in my way? I was fully prepared to go 1-on-5. I didn't ask for The Rock's help. He volunteered it, but I'm not stupid enough to turn it down. So the question is, will it be enough? And my answer is, it's going to have to be. Because I will get through tonight. I will get through Hell in a Cell. And I will go on to WrestleMania. Because it's meant to be. Beat me!
Really strong promo here from the Daniel Bryan of 2000. It was booked slightly better. Mm-hmm. And then the main event way, 10-man tag. Triple H, X-Pac, Benoit, Malenko, and Saturn.
Well, it was announced as a 5-on-2.
5-on-2, where Cactus Jack and The Rock came out, and then the lights went out, and it was this awkward intro by Rikishi and Too Cool, who joined the Babyfaces, so we had a full 10-man tag. Mm-hmm. The Radicals came out to this real funky theme song that was probably used for about a week before they got different music. Stephanie was on commentary for this whole match with Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler. How did you find her to be?
Quite honestly, I didn't mind her. I felt like she kind of added to the whole atmosphere. You know?
There were times that she was on commentary all the time, and there were certain times where she would just shriek and yell. This wasn't one of them. I didn't mind her that much.
It was really just a louder version of what you'd hear her. Like, I mean, I thought it helped because you got to hear the heel's reaction to all the things that were happening. And yeah, I didn't think she was overbearing here.
The crowd is just going nuts at the start here. Cactus and Benoit are in the ring first. Scotty got tagged in and hit the worm, which Stephanie called the most ridiculous thing in the world. Got a huge pop. Rikishi comes in, storms out of the corner with a clothesline to Malenko. Benoit's in and hits this big German suplex to Rikishi that looked really impressive. Rikishi comes back with a belly-to-belly. Cactus gets tagged in for another huge reaction. The whole crowd is just building and building and building to The Rock getting tagged in. Hunter comes in with Jack for a brief exchange, then X-Pac is in. Cactus then tags in Rock. arena just erupts here. Hits a pair of spine busters, a rock bottom to X-Pac, where Hunter makes the save. Benoit and Saturn come in, and they get the heat on Brian Christopher, where the two of them blow snot onto Brian Christopher.
It's so gross.
What a disgusting tactic. Brian Christopher ends up hitting a double DDT to Malenko and Benoit, tags in Cactus, then everyone's in the ring fighting. There's a pedigree to Brian Christopher, and then Benoit hits a diving headbutt as everyone else is off fighting, and Benoit pins Christopher. 10 minutes, 14 seconds. Crowd heat was just off the charts during this match.
It was incredible. I mean, it seemed like every shift in momentum for the baby faces, you'd hear just another surge of excitement coming from this audience. And it just seemed to be like an instance of them having baby faces that were really over, particularly, of course, in The Rock and Mick Foley. But, you know, Too Cool as well. And I kind of find it hard for me to remember when Too Cool was this over. But there was certainly a window there where, you know, of course, Rikishi was huge. And, you know, by association, so were the other two.
From there, we had a post-match brawl with the New Age Outlaws coming out. The lights go out as they're attacking the babyfaces. And Paul Bearer, a slimmed-down Paul Bearer, comes out wearing this red jacket. And out comes Kane, who had been off TV a couple of weeks since the Tory, I guess, breakup. And he attacks everybody in the ring, choke slams Perry Saturn and Billy Gunn, and then sets off his pyro as the show goes off the air, and Kane would be feuding with X-Pac coming out of this show. So, pretty hot edition of Raw. I thought this show just, man, was it easy to watch. Just everything was constantly moving.
And I feel like it's kind of unfair when we review these Raws right before we have to watch a three-hour Raw.
Yeah.
Because maybe a big part of the reason why we like it is just simply due to the length of how fast it moves. But I was kind of nostalgic for a lot of this stuff too. So overall, yeah, I enjoyed the show. I thought it moved very fast. I thought, yeah, it was fun.
So once again, this show did a 6.49 rating. Nitro going against it, 2.7.
Wow. Would they have had? It would have been like Sid winning the title or something.
This was that period in between Russo stints for the company. Right. So, yeah, you had Sid feuding with Kevin Nash and Scott Hall at the time. Yeah, so nonetheless, like a combined 9 million people watching wrestling on that particular Monday night. So pretty impressive when you look back at that.
I wonder.
And today we get like 5 or so.
Yeah, but I mean, I wonder what this network, I wonder if there's going to be any way for them to measure how many people are watching wrestling just on the network.
I would imagine that the fact you got to click on stuff, that they have to be able to tabulate what's getting the most click through.
And you could tell that their statistics department will milk every single number combination that they could find.
Dude, they're on their game for this stuff.
At 10:45 p.m., more people combined in the Western Hemisphere watched a video from WWE.com.
You're going to be inundated with stats for the next couple of months.
Yeah.
All right. Well, how did you enjoy that Raw? I remember so clearly that main event, watching it live at the time, of just how hot that crowd was. So that was one of the reasons I wanted to go back and watch that Raw. So I haven't watched it since. But pretty good Raw. I mean, made me want to see that pay-per-view main event that they got across.
Yes.
Not so into Big Show and Rock, which Big Show wasn't even on this show. But they did.
They aired a little promo, like a little video.
Yeah, I think those were just like kind of inserts for. They almost didn't even feel part of the show. Yeah. We watched like this UK version of the show. But man, I give this like a 9 out of 10 show. Really like this Raw. Great main event, pushed your pay per view, and man, just I'm a big fan of just keep me entertained.
I thought it was a very good main event, and yeah, I thought they set up the Foley's retirement match very well, and that Rock promo is one of the more memorable Rock promos with the Poontang Pie shirt. I mean, I wouldn't go as far to say 9, though. I'd probably give it maybe like 7 out of 10.
All right, so we're going to head on over to the message board right now and see what you folks had to say about this particular edition of Raw. Why don't you start us off, Way, as my computer is not loading here.
Okay. Why don't I wait for my computer to load?
Oh, man. Okay, here we go.
We're so unprepared.
Danny Hernandez starts off. Ah, great gem of a show you guys picked. As a Dallas resident, I've never been to a show at the Reunion Arena, as it was replaced as the go-to arena in town when the American Airlines Arena was built, and retired from event booking after that, so that could be a reason the place was so hot. A venue with rich pro wrestling history, with the world-class Star Wars show, similar to the Maple Leaf Gardens in feel, but the Reunion Arena was in the ghetto part of Dallas next to a courthouse and bail bond. Looking at the talent roster during the show, everyone was over in some form. Even though I see today's WWE roster to have great in-ring depth, the 2000 roster had four or five people that are legit in-ring and character. The main event was... was the wrestling equivalent of doing acid. Fast-paced, everyone worked their ass off, loved the two cool spots, and Saturn and Chris snot shot spot. Stephanie on commentary, and return of Kane to end the show. Hot! Exclamation points.
Yeah. Keith from...
Kurth.
Kurth from Vancouver.
Keirth.
What a weird name. Okay, Keirth.
Could be on acid.
Keirth. Who would name their kid Keirth?
Maybe they heard them wrong. I said, no, I said Keith. Oh, birth certificate's already written up.
First time leaving feedback, but long time listener. Just wanted to say I love the podcast and really appreciate the time and effort you guys put in doing them. Well, thank you. I never realized how annoying Triple H's promos were. He would constantly repeat the same thing over and over again. For example, he tells Cactus Jack, it's time to put this matter to rest. This has gone on too long. It's time to finish it once and for all. One more time, you and me at No Way Out. One more time, but this is it. Your last shot at me. Your last shot at the belt. Jesus Christ, he sounds like a kid who didn't study for his midterms and just bullshitted his way through the written portion. Even though that's only the first segment, I will leave it at that.
All right, from Robert. In retrospect, there's nothing that I find interesting with that show or the shows of that era in general. I did like the rebirth of the technical talents of that very time, like Jericho, Benoit, and the rest of the Radicals. Everything else is just regurgitated stuff on par with the 1998 Kevin Nash and Conan WCW level. The Rock, however innovative with the way he abuses interviewers like Kevin Kelly or Jonathan Coachman, seems to be very repetitive. Stephanie McMahon, well, I muted the volume when she was on commentary. And who would think to make a main event with the technically proficient newcomer with Rikishi and Too Cool? For that matter, who would put Chris Jericho with Viscera? I know I shouldn't be against that now that he's dead, but still, you have a hot talent that WCW wasted and you're not using him correctly. I'm not saying that you should push him like a CM Punk title run, but I would just put him in the main event with the good guys. That can contribute a lot to bring back the Benoit-Jericho feud, since Benoit's not expected to win the WWF title. As he was new at the time, you can definitely start an IC title program right away that night.
Elliot from London, England. Great episode of Raw. The 10-man tag match was an all-time classic that had stuck in my mind after all these years. The New Age Outlaws tag team champions of the world and the authority running the show, my, how things change over the last 14 years. Seems the only thing that has changed is Stephanie's voice, although it is still just as annoying in 2014 as it was in 2000.
Gaurav from India. Wow, thanks for reviewing this episode of Raw and taking me back to the good old days of wrestling. Mick Foley was fantastic on the microphone and Triple H was the number one heel who the fans loved to hate back then. It's crazy to look back and watch the entire crowd chanting the long intro promo of the New Age Outlaws along with them at the same time. They were over like Rover, in spite of being heels. Can't say the same for their current run in 2014. Bubba Ray Dudley intimidating JR on commentary was funny. The Rock's backstage promo was so good, he had the crowd in the palm of his hand. His antics with Kevin Kelly were awesome. Hey, Cena, that's how you cut an entertaining backstage promo and engage the audience. With Stone Cold being gone due to injury, The Rock was the number one babyface in the year 2000, and his stock damn sure skyrocketed during this period. Kane coming back at the end was a huge surprise, and I love how almost all episodes of Raw is War during the Attitude Era would abruptly go off the air with JR screaming his lungs out. Captivating stuff. Can't wait for the network to launch here in India so I can watch the entire Attitude Era again. I give this show 9 Poontang Pies out of 10.
Josh from Oshawa, who says, I was glad to watch this old episode of Raw and forgot how much I marked out at the time, to a point where I still marked out today. Case in point, the Radicals' heel turn and the entire 10-man tag. Some good stuff here. Some odd notes. Everybody did an atomic leg drop, which I find odd that comes up with Hogan now that he's back with the company. You could have made a drinking game out of it with how many there were. I did not realize how over Edge and Christian were. A lot of violence on women here. I forgot how profound it was back then, but I legit marked out when Kurt Angle celebrated after his Angle Slam.
He was very proud.
The amount of recapping from the first segment was more than what you get nowadays, but it was effective here, so that's forgivable. The Hollies mentioning they can move up in the tag division. This concept needs to come back for any and all divisions nowadays. It would give a little more meaning for the titles. The death count was sadly high on this show, and a lot of recent ones too, but I did not let that ruin the show. Overall, 8 out of 10.
All right, Derek from Denton, Texas. This was an awesome show and had all of the things I loved about the WWF back at this time. I thought the hardcore tag team match started off pretty awesome, especially when the Acolytes took a swig of beer during the match, but the finish kind of killed it for me. After seeing the Dudleys, Hardys, and ENC brawling with each other, it makes me want to go back and watch all of their TLC matches again. As usual, The Rock and Mick Foley were awesome throughout the night, and Triple H was a great heel. I was happy to see Kane show up at the end and chokeslam the heels. Overall, awesome show, 9 out of 10. Also, I realized during this show that this road to WrestleMania feud is in WWF No Mercy.
Oh. Craig in the UK here. I'm rather biased about the show as I started watching wrestling properly around the Royal Rumble of 2000, and this is the year I remember as my own golden era. Say what you want about run-ins and DQs on weekly TV around this time, but I'd rather have that than even Steven's booking now, where everyone trades losses and no one progresses up the card. You could describe a lot about this time as very goofy, pregnant Mae Young, Godfather, etc., but at least it's not plain boring unlike of what we have to put up with now on the undercard. For all the short cutoff matches of the time, you were pretty much always guaranteed a great main event match each week with Raw. I thought it was tremendous and I forgot all about the Kane return, one of the biggest pops ever. I thought it was clever how the crowd were demanding The Rock at the top of their lungs and then made sure he was the last babyface to tag in, easily the most over wrestler of the time, and the WWF were totally behind him.
Up to the Skull Captain. If you want to understand one big reason why WCW crashed and burned in 2000, this show held the answer. The Radicals, Chris Jericho and the Giant, had all come across from Atlanta, irreparably damaging the core of WCW's mid-card strength and giving the WWF so much, which then they put to good use, bolstering the weakness in their own middle ranks. Eventually, though, through patience and time, they would build these new recruits to be credible upper card talent once the big five at that time, Rock, Foley, Austin, Triple H, and Taker, would leave or suffer long-term injuries. I wonder if lessons can be learned from this time in the current WWE product. Solid but important 90 minutes of Raw, 6 out of 10.
Chris says, This main event of Raw is my favorite WWF match of all time, and I get a kick out of several lines and matches throughout the episode. Chris Jericho's Mr. T line has stayed in my memory and amused me ever since this show, even though I know it's cheesy. Same goes for Devon Dudley justifying Bubba interfering in a match by yelling, "He was making fun of Bubba." I was impressed by how hard Jericho worked to have an entertaining match with Viscera when they were so mismatched in size and style. I recorded the main event off TV back in 2000 and watched it over and over again, loving everything about it. The unforgettable atmosphere created by the ecstatic audience, the manic pace, and the many big moves and moments. I think everyone on screen during this match was at their best. Even Stephanie was fun on commentary. I especially enjoyed how she and JR reacted to the Malenko and Benoit snot-blowing taunt. I love how he sarcastically declares, "That's classy. That's very classy." And she replies, "I thought it was cute myself, JR."
And finally, Sean from Perth, Australia. What a great edition of Raw. The year 2000 was such another strong year for the company with the introduction of new stars such as Angle, the Radicals, and the Dudleys, to name a few. The build for Mania was excellent. Shame, though, that WrestleMania 2000 itself was an overbooked mess. In terms of Raw, Triple H was really a strong character at this point, by far the best heel in the company, and he benefited most from the absence of Austin. Back then, I didn't enjoy the way Foley basically lost all his matches on the way to WrestleMania and never saw him as a threat for the title. The main event was epic, but a few major gaffes were laughable, especially when Too Cool and Rikishi entered and the commentators didn't know what was going on, and also the finish of the match too was botched. After Benoit's headbutt and pin attempt, Cactus had a clear chance to break up the pin but didn't. The commentators again looked confused, as did Stephanie. Kane's return with Paul Bearer was a highlight. Kane's return really made him feel like a big star, but shame though, all it led to was a lame tag match at Mania with Rikishi against X-Pac and Road Dogg. Still, I enjoyed the show. Definitely a classic. 9 Kevin Kelly Poontang Pies out of 10.
You know, like, I think we associate a lot of the reason for the WWF product's work rate being up around this time to the Radicals. But, I mean, we often forget that Kurt Angle debuted around this time, too. But I feel like, you know, I wonder if Kurt Angle would have ever become as good as he has
if not for the influence of, you know, guys like Chris Benoit.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, you get better by working with people that are better than you and not working with guys at your level. I mean, being in there each night working with guys like that, you're going to improve. And Kurt Angle was a freak when it came to that progression that he made just all in that opening year. Mm-hmm. It was really incredible to watch. So there you go. That was Raw from February 7th of 2000, which we have now reviewed once and will hopefully never review again because we're not into the repeat business yet on this podcast. But next week, Way, we have asked people, what would you like us to review? What pay-per-view on the WWE Network should we review? We've gotten a bunch here. Do you want to do the one I indicated earlier, or do you want to take a look at others?
Are there any others that kind of jump out at you just at first glance?
Yeah, we've got a few here. No Way Out 2001.
And nothing as appealing as the one that you chose?
Let's go with...
let's go.
All right.
Let's do it.
Next week, folks, we are going to review WCW Spring Stampede 1997.
What is the significance of that show?
Well, it is known for a very infamous promo by one Booker T backstage as he alerts Hulk Hogan that he's coming for him. And that will be our review next week on the show. Spring Stampede 1997.
Yeah, we initially wanted to do a Hulk Hogan-related review for this show. That's why we picked Super Brawl, because Hogan's coming back, of course. But next week, we'll have to wait for that, because this is one of the more notable Hulk Hogan-related incidents in pro wrestling history.
Yeah, on a pay-per-view he doesn't even perform on.
Yep.
So that'll be our review next week. If you've got the network, no excuse not to watch it. And if you don't have the network, we've got a pretty savvy listenership out there.
Yeah, I'd say so.
So if you can track this down, that will be the review for next week. I don't believe we've reviewed this one. If we have, we'll update it on Thursday.
Yeah.
So let's get on out of here. More shows coming up this week, folks. We've got new Bauer and Pollock show is up. The MMA Report featuring Bjorn Rebney. That is going to be up on Thursday, review and impact. And The Law this Sunday night, 11 Eastern, we're going to be joined by Mickey James and TNA champion Magnus.
Whoa.
So what a show we've got on Sunday night. Two guests for you.
I hear those two used to be an item.
We're going to find out.
If they are an item?
If that...
Again?
Who knows?
That's the big question.
You know Jay. He goes right to the meat of a topic.
Jason will probably most likely ask about that.
So that's coming up Sunday night. LiveAudioWrestling.com as well as TSN 1050 Toronto, the Team 1040 Vancouver, and Sirius XM 167. You can follow Way at Way0937. Tell him he should get a PVR. And we can only hope that Way makes a smooth transition.
Oh yes,
over
to adulthood,
a new era in wrestling, and a new era in Wei Ting's life.
It's like I'm jumping ship, as a radical.
You're leaving Scarborough after all these years.
I'm making a radical move.
Oh,
and to go out of this podcast, why not go out to some radical music?
Oh God,
this is the Radicals' first WWE theme.
A not-so-memorable one.
A completely generic bit of music.
Here you go, folks. They landed four of the biggest talents WCW had, and this was the music they wanted to represent their four huge acquisitions to take us out on this week's edition of Review Away.
Yeah, I don't even know what the music is. What does it sound like?